This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Tehran slams the International Atomic Energy Agency after it raised concerns over what it calls covert changes to equipment at Iran's Fordo uranium enrichment plant. The United States shoots down what it calls a Chinese spy balloon that had been flying over American airspace for several days. And thousands of people protest in Tel Aviv for a fifth consecutive week against policies of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extreme far-right cabinet. Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to World News. Iran has announced UN nuclear watchdog over its Wednesday report that it raised concerns over changes to equipment at a nuclear site. Iran's nuclear chief, Mohammad Islami, said that the IAEA report is based on a mistake by an inspector during a visit to the Fordo plant. Tehran has written to the agency explaining the inspector's mistake, but the agency has publicized the issue. Iranian official criticized the agency's behavior as unprofessional and unacceptable. Islami warned such practices will harm the IAEA's reputation. U.S. and its European allies have issued a joint statement accusing Iran of being inconsistent with its obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. They say Tehran's response to the agency has been inadequate. Author and journalist Robert Fantina joined us earlier with his take on the IAEA anti-Iran allegations. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
It was the United States, as you said, that destroyed it. The United States that violated the JCPOA. Iran, as I've mentioned before in previous conversations, remained fully compliant with the JCPOA for a full year after the United States reissued the sanctions. Iran was not under any obligation to do that. Once the agreement is violated by one party, then it's null and void, basically. But expecting that the other countries would continue trade and continue to support Iran, the Iranian government gave them a year to do so. And once they ceased doing that, the Iranian government rightly continued with its nuclear program once again. It's the United States that can't be trusted. It's the United States that has violated agreements continually. And it's the United States that should be sanctioned and should be held accountable for its violations of international law.
Iran's top nuclear negotiator says that Tehran is a claimant in JCPOA revival talks, and it's the U.S. and the European allies to make up for their mistakes.
We are the claimant. Then the other side are the Americans. They are the ones who should show their commitment in practice if they want to return to the JCPOA, as they say, and show their commitment to the agreement. And the same goes for the Europeans. It is the Europeans who prove their non-adherence to our nation through various excuses during the period when the U.S. withdrew from the JCPOA.
Bagheri Kani also said the experience of the JCPOA has taught Iran not to wait for the accord to achieve its goals. It should not rely on foreign powers either. He said the U.S. and its European allies have proved in recent years when it comes to their interests, they don't care about any moral principle. He cited the fact that Western sanctions have impeded Iran's access to food and medicine. The Iranian diplomat, however, said Tehran is still seriously following the sanctions removal talks and hopes the efforts will bear fruit.
The issue has been seriously pursued by the Islamic Republic of Iran and continues to be so. But the opposite party makes false excuses, as before, in pursuit of a series of goals beyond the negotiations. We have repeatedly announced that the Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to continue negotiations within the framework of the previous agreement. And we continue on this path.
Iran rolled back compliance with the nuclear accord after the U.S. withdrew from it and reimposed sanctions against Iran. Tehran and the remaining signatories have held talks on trying to revive the accord since April of 2021. This after the U.S. President Joe Biden took office. Talks have been stalled for months now, though, amid Washington's refusal to provide guarantees. Iran argues an agreement on its revival hinges on the settlements of safeguards issues between Tehran and the IAEA, as well as the removal of all U.S. sanctions. Now, the U.S. says it's shot down what it calls a Chinese spy balloon that's flown across America over the past week. U.S. military said its fighter jets downed the balloon with a missile over the Atlantic Ocean when it floated off the southeastern coast of the country. Military had previously warned that a shoot down over land could risk casualties on the ground. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the balloon was being used by China to surveil strategic sites in the continental U.S. China, however, said the balloon was for civilian meteorological purposes and had only strayed into U.S. airspace. The incident brought a new low to already tense relations between the two nations. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken postponed his China visit over the incident. The Philippines has allowed the U.S. to boost its military presence by giving Washington access to four more bases in the country. The move is part of Washington's attempts to gain strategic advantage over China in the region. Now, Washington and Manila are concerned over Beijing's increased assertiveness that is in the South China Sea. China slammed America's increased military presence in the region as a provocation.
The United States is ramping up its efforts to counter China's growing regional power. Amid Washington's rising tensions with Beijing over the South China Sea and Taiwan, Washington and Manila agreed on plans to accelerate the full implementation of the, quote, Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, with the full agreement to designate four new agreed locations in strategic areas of the Philippines. The deal would allow Washington to deploy military equipment and rotate its troops to four more bases. Washington has currently five bases in the Philippines. The two sides also agreed on the substantial completion of the project in existing agreed locations.
Today, Secretary Galvez and I also reaffirmed our mutual defense treaty commitments. And we'd note that the mutual defense treaty applies to armed attacks on either of our armed forces, public vessels, or aircraft anywhere in the South China Sea or the West Philippine Sea.
According to experts, Washington's access to those bases could provide U.S. forces a strategic position from which to mount operations in the event of a conflict over Chinese Taipei or in the South China Sea. China has criticized the U.S. for its plan to increase its military presence in the Philippines, warning that granting the U.S. greater access to military bases by Manila could hurt regional stability and raise tensions. The move is part of U.S. plans to encircle China's maritime border in anticipation of a war over Taiwan, which Beijing considers as its own. Last year, tensions rose to unprecedented levels after the then U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited the island. China has repeatedly warned against any attempt that delegitimizes its national sovereignty. Furthermore, China claims sovereignty over virtually all of the South China Sea, which is also claimed in part by Brunei, Vietnam, Malaysia, and the Philippines. The waters are believed to sit atop vast reserves of oil and gas.
U.S. has also reopened its embassy in the Solomon Islands after 30 years. Move is further attempt on the part of Washington to counter Beijing's growing influence in the South Pacific. NATO is also trying to expand its ties with Japan, also in a bid to counter China.
In another attempt to counter China, the U.S. has opened an embassy in the Solomon Islands after a 30-year absence as it seeks to boost diplomatic relations in the Pacific. The last U.S. embassy in the Solomon Islands closed in 1993. The move comes after China struck a security pact with Solomon Islands last year. It was the first known bilateral security agreement between China and a country in the Pacific. The region has become the center of a geopolitical and strategic tug-of-war between China and the U.S. Meanwhile, NATO, which is a U.S.-led military bloc, is trying to bolster its ties with Japan in a bid to strengthen an alliance against China. The NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has visited Japan, saying the Western military alliance will continue to strengthen its partnership with Tokyo.
Beijing is watching closely and learning lessons that may influence its future decisions. What is happening in Europe today could happen in East Asia tomorrow. So we must remain united and firm, standing together for freedom and democracy.
Japan is a close ally of the U.S., and in recent years, it has expanded its military ties with other Indo-Pacific nations, as well as the United Kingdom, Europe, and NATO. Back in December, Tokyo unveiled a new national security strategy that will see a large increase in its military capabilities. The strategy includes the deployment of long-range missiles. Japan also hopes to ease restrictions on arms export to strengthen its military industry.
Tens of thousands of demonstrators have once again hit the streets of Tel Aviv protesting against the policies of right-wing cabinet led by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters chanted slogans against him and carried banners and signs that read, "Cabinet of Shame and Bring Down the Dictator." Israelis have been protesting against Netanyahu's regime for 5 straight weeks. Protesters are expressing disapproval over what they're calling a fascist cabinet and his proposed reforms meant to increase political power. Now, Benjamin Netanyahu returned to power at the head of a coalition with extreme right and ultra-Orthodox parties. Cabinet is planning to hand over more powers to lawmakers in appointing judges and overriding rulings of the regime's Supreme Court. The coalition also intends to intensify expansionist policy with more settlement units to be built in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli regime has intensified its deadly crackdown on Palestinian in recent weeks. Now, troops stormed Aqaba Jaber refugee camp under the pretext a Palestinian opened fire at an Israeli restaurant. We discussed this issue earlier with our guests in our news review program.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Israeli forces have injured at least 13 Palestinians during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jericho, or Ariha. The troops stormed the Aqaba Jaber refugee camp for the 6th consecutive day. They entered the camp with heavy machinery to arrest a Palestinian man that they claim had opened fire on an Israeli restaurant. This is a day after the regime forces attacked the city of Nablus, where they killed a Palestinian. Elsewhere on Friday, they injured dozens of people who were protesting the expansion of Israeli settlements on the occupied territories. The regime has intensified deadly crackdown on Palestinians in recent weeks. 36 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone so far this year. Chris Williamson joins us from Derby in the UK. Zafar Bangash, Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, joins us from Toronto. Gentlemen, welcome. I'd like to start with you, if I may, Chris, taking a look at perhaps something that is quite, I don't want to use the word shocking, but it was quite unbelievable to see the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, in the area, and the reaction that he had in terms of the press conferences that we saw. Because if you were to take those press conferences with his presence out of the context of what's happening on the occupied territories, you would think it's just any other day, based on the way that he responded to what is happening. Are we looking at how would you categorize the U.S. role when it comes to the way that things are back to status quo for Israel on the ground in occupied Palestine?
Well, frankly, I don't think that Israel could conduct itself in the way that it does without the tacit approval of the United States of America. And it's therefore really important, I think, that people on the ground in the States, and indeed across the world, actually, highlight the daily atrocities that the Zionist regime are actually perpetrating on the Palestinian people. And I speak to people in the States on a regular basis, and there is a growing dissatisfaction, frankly, with the blank check that the United States administration are giving the Israeli regime to just carry out these appalling actions on a routine basis. And furthermore, I think people in the States are getting increasingly concerned about the fact that whilst they have no Medicare for all, while under virtually every bridge in every state in the country, people are sleeping on the streets. People can't afford to get an education because that leaves people with massive debts, and yet they are prepared to shell out £4 or 5 billion every single year in monetary aid, military aid to the Israeli regime. And I think people are getting increasingly sick of this. And there is now in the United States a third party which is gaining ground. And I think politicians will start to take note. I hope they do, certainly anyway, in the United States, because the groundswell of opposition, I think, to the position that both parties have taken is actually beginning to lose patience with the direction that the states have allowed the Zionist regime to go.
One of the things that also stands out this past week, Bangash, I don't know if you caught the interview that one of these American channels had with Prime Minister Netanyahu, where amongst many shocking statements, one of them was, don't get hung up on peace with Palestinians. Let's go from the outside in. Again, I don't know if you caught that interview, but what do you make of that statement and stance that Netanyahu has vis-a-vis the Palestinians?
Well, it makes absolutely clear that Zionists are not interested in any peace in any shape or form. The policy that they have been pursuing for decades, and that policy has now intensified since the new, even more extreme cabinet was cobbled together at the end of December, clearly indicates that the Zionists have escalated their violence against the Palestinian people. And what they want to do is to crush the resistance completely, to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. And that is what we witness in terms of the massive settlement activities that are taking place or have been authorized on the occupied West Bank. And also the very, very frequent encroachments on Masjid al-Aqsa compound. These are all indications that the Zionists do not care for any peace, and they are going to use whatever force necessary. And they've got a blank check from the Americans and other of their Western allies who really don't care for Palestinian lives. And so this policy of brutality will continue. And Netanyahu simply confirmed that in his television interview that, you know, forget about peace with the Palestinians. That means this was a clear admission and indication that his regime is going to continue with this brutal policy of killing the Palestinians.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much to both of you. Chris Williamson, host of Palestine Declassified from Derby, UK, and Zafar Bangash, director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought from Toronto. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Many farm workers in the U.S. are still out of work and struggling to afford food in the wake of California's disastrous floods. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Throughout, in this regard, workers in California who grow and pick the majority of fruits and nuts in the United States are experiencing an acute crisis of on- and underemployment, an ensuing food insecurity following the procession of atmospheric rivers that drenched the state in January. In a mere matter of days, many locations across the Golden State absorbed the upwards of half the precipitation that tends to fall over the course of an entire year. Over 32 trillion gallons between December 25th and January 20th. Amid record drought conditions, soils shifted from scorched to soaked overnight, leading to hundreds of landslides, cars swept away by floodwaters, and at least 22 deaths. Farm owners are now tallying the damage to apply for federal disaster assistance, and amid the welcome sunshine, public discourse has turned to silver linings like the Fuller Reservoir and how the rainfall was great for agriculture. But the people at the heart of the fruit basket of the U.S., over three-quarters of nuts and fruits and one-third of vegetables consumed in the U.S. are grown in California. Farm workers have weathered long stretches without work or with significantly fewer hours, making it all but impossible to feed their own families. Julia Horta, a single mother of four who has lived in Oxnard, California for 10 years, felt the impact of the storms in December. Horta, who works growing blackberries and strawberries, made $200 per week that month, with fewer hours available due to wet conditions. It wasn't nearly enough to cover all of her expenses. Her rent alone is $2,000 per month, though she was able to feed herself and her children, who are 6, 10, 12, and 13 years old. She didn't work a single day in January because the fields were oozing with water and mud. Horta told Truthout, "It's really difficult to support my kids right now." When asked what she would like to see elected officials do to support farm workers like her who remain out of work or with lost hours, the first thing Horta listed and swiftly was migration reform, adding also help paying rent and food. Global warming caused primarily by the burning of fossil fuels is altering the behavior of atmospheric rivers, the vast aerial tides of water vapor thousands of miles long and hundreds wide that drive the majority of precipitation on the U.S. West Coast. As atmospheric rivers warm and widen, they are projected to produce winter storms dumping up to 40% more water by mid-century. The extremes have gave implications for the food system. In 2022, irrigated cropland in California shrank 752,000 acres when compared with 2019, due mostly to drought. Floodwaters are presenting a new layer of complications. Consumers who were already experiencing rising prices linked with extreme weather are now taking a hit for the January storms. As Andrew Stevens, assistant professor of agriculture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, told WEAU News. According to Stevens' projections, prices for produce like lettuce are likely to continue rising over the next few weeks due to a shortage in supply, though he expects the ripple effect will be short-term. Farm owners and other impacted agricultural operations are estimated to have absorbed millions in damages to livestock, crops, and infrastructure. But short of social reforms that take a stock of how climate change will heighten personal insecurity for the most vulnerable, perhaps no one stands to be more intimately impacted than the state's 500,000 to 800,000 farm workers, an estimated half of whom are undocumented and under existing laws do not qualify for unemployment or any other benefits. Even when hours are available, farm workers in the U.S. earn an average of $14,000 annually, as PRISM has reported. In spite of the complex skills required, that level of compensation does not leave workers with much potential for savings. Workers like Horta currently rely on support from food distribution events or effects like private campaigns. But anecdotally, thousands were still without work the last week of January, according to the United Farm Workers, UFW Communications Director Antonio De Lorella Brost, who noted that if studied comprehensively, that figure would likely be much higher, somewhere in the tens of thousands. Al Jazeera English also noted, California's agricultural workforce has long struggled with low wages and vulnerability stemming from immigration status. A mass shooting that killed 7 farm workers in the United States last week has brought renewed attention to the hardships faced by agricultural workers in the state of California, stretched thin by low wages and the high cost of living. The shooting on January 23 took place in the coastal community of Half Moon Bay, a small coastal town about 40 kilometers south of San Francisco in Northern California.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Mohsen Nahwi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of i'tikaf, especially during the months of Rajab, Sha'ban, and the month of Ramadan. In the middle of the months, 13th, 14th, and the 15th days and nights of these months, the people used to, the Muslims, have a kind of spiritual retreat. They go into the mosque, reside over there, fast for 3 days, and are busy with worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. What is the significance of these days in the Islamic calendar and the Islamic lifestyle, Shaykh Rouhani?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Theologically, we Muslims believe that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is merciful and kind.
Yes.
Because of His kindness and mercy towards people, towards the servants, He actually provided us with a special kind of programs to help us to improve ourselves, to perfect ourselves. So the way to perfect ourselves is this, that to practice whatever is ordered and commanded by the Prophet ﷺ and the Imam of Ahlul Bayt.
Yes.
But sometimes some people might think that, okay, it is really difficult to live like role models, like Imam Ali in this world, like the pious people in this world. Particularly for the youth, it sometimes might become a bit questionable that, okay, it's really impossible nowadays to live that way.
Yes.
One of the very nice and very interesting practical kind of instrument or mean by which we can actually practically experience this kind of spiritual sort of environment in nowadays life is this, to attend this i'tikaf.
Yes.
Because a mu'takif, the person who is performing i'tikaf, he actually practice and performs practically whatever is ordered by Islam in a very spiritual kind of environment.
Yes.
And actually he practically feel that he is under the monitoring of presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Everything is observed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the holy imam, 12th imam, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif.
Yes.
So that's why I think it is due to the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, due to the kindness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that sometimes provided us with this kind of instructions, particularly in the month of Ramadan, that you have to practice at least 3 days in a year.
Yes.
Practically try to be a good, pious Muslim, a real faithful believer and mu'min. Yes. Then, because this would be a kind of step towards perfection that you put.
Very good.
That's why I think this i'tikaf in the holy month of Rajab is really significant, is really important, particularly for the youth.
For the youth, that's right.
They have to attend.
I will get back to you for the benefits of i'tikaf and what are the benefits of i'tikaf, how to keep, we can say, the spirit of i'tikaf after we leave, for example, the mosque or the residing place. We know that these days are called the white days because they say that in the 13th, 14th and the 15th, days and the nights of the lunar calendar, the moon is its most complete form and shining as possible. That's what is called the days which nights are brighter than the other nights. And a person becomes mu'takef, we can say, a resident of a holy place like a mosque or a holy place. Sayyid Mohsen, how do you find, we can say, this period of time for a Muslim and a Muslim's life? Is it done by all the Muslims around the world or no? On the specific to the Shias and the Shia world.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, first of all, I want to mention that since Islam is a perfect set of life, and Allah has provided all the means that are necessary for the mankind to reach the perfection, therefore He put some workshops in the Islamic rituals.
Okay, good.
For example, you know, we fast for specific days other than the month of Ramadan. So the first workshop is the month of Ramadan. You fast for the whole month.
Okay.
It is to train yourself, you know, because the training or workshops are there. You train yourself, you practice something, and you get some skills.
Yes.
So in the month of Ramadan, you get the skills of how to, you know, give away your food to others, how to bear the hunger, and how to be patient in different places. On the other hand, we have, for example, especially in the Shia school of thought, we have the month of mourning, the month of Muharram, where we learn how the hardships were beared by the Ahlul Bayt, especially Imam Hussein, alayhi salatu wasalam.
Yes.
Another workshop, the greater workshop, is the Hajj, where when people go, they are forbidden from the things which were halal, for example, for them. That's why ihram is like when you put these clothes, something becomes haram on you.
Yeah, you're banned. Which
were allowed.
Yes.
For example, you don't comb your hairs. You don't, you know, the
husband and wife cannot. Beautify yourself.
Yes, you don't beautify yourself.
You don't have
there are many things.
Radicals,
you cannot, you cannot hunt anything, even a fly or the mosquito. You can you cannot kill.
Okay.
The shorter form of Hajj, we can say, is the i'tikaf. Which is at least for 3 days and maximum for 10 days.
For 10 days, that's right.
Or it can go more than that. It depends on the person's, like, you know, capacity, how it wants.
Okay.
In the Sunni school of thought, they have 10 days i'tikaf.
Yes.
And no less than that.
Okay.
It's the last 10 days of the, you know, month of Ramadan, or the last 10 days of Rajab, we can say.
Yes.
But in the Shia school of thought, according to the narrations that we have from Ahlul Bayt, it starts, minimum is 3 days. And then you can add on 3 more days, like.
Yes.
This way you can have 10 days or 9 days maximum, you can say, like 3 days, 3 days, and 3 days for the last 10 days of the month of Ramadan and the Rajab as well.
Yes.
So basically this was the background. So the i'tikaf is one of the workshops, which is to train you, which is to purify you, which is to take you away from the, you know, the busy life of the world.
Yes.
Because, you know, in the i'tikaf, we leave our mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
We stay in an environment.
Is it a ruling?
Yeah, it is. It is from the It's leaving the mobile.
Yes,
it is said, like, do not get involved into the worldly things.
Worldly things. That's
for example, you should not go out to buy the things and all those.
Oh.
Except it is if it is necessary that you want to do iftar, because the very first thing is you need to fast in these 3 days.
Oh,
you fast in these 3 days, and the major point is not to live in the mosque. That is not the main thing about this. You know, the philosophy behind it.
Yes.
It is not to bear fasting for 3 days, living in a closed environment. This is not the goal and aim.
Yes.
The goal and aim is to ponder. to think about yourself.
Very good. Tafakkur.
You know, tafakkur.
Yes.
For these 3 days, at least 3 days, you're away from the world. You mm-hmm. don't take your mobile phone with you. You do not, you know.
You're not connected to the
physical. You adore yourself. Yes, yes. You don't beautify yourself.
Yes, yes.
You take care of halal and haram, everything.
Uh-huh.
You speak nicely to people. You worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then that is the time to think about yourself, that why I was here.
Mm-hmm.
How can I get to the perfection?
Very
you know,
good.
When I go back for these 3 days, for example, if I'm not using my WhatsApp or Instagram,
yes, yes.
If I can bear this, yes, for my rest of life, I can control my timings
mm-hmm.
of using such things.
That's right.
There are many other things, you know, Facebook, YouTube, other
yes,
things
yes, yes.
that I was spending my life, yeah. I was wasting my time.
But today's generation, especially yes. youth, are busy with these things, the
they
social
should, they should go
networks.
There.
That's
so
right.
it
okay.
is the time to ponder about ourselves. Even the same thing is in Hajj. You know, in Hajj, you have nothing to do. You know, for example, mm-hmm. when you go to Arafat, you have to spend a night.
Yeah.
And you're doing nothing. You're just sitting
in
a bare
desert. You have to sit down.
People, if they know yes. the goal of the Arafat, mm-hmm. when you go there, is to sit there and ponder,
yes.
to think. You know, on the Hajj, why I'm stoning three shaitan, for example.
Okay.
What is the purpose?
What is the philosophy? That's right.
We need to go back to the philosophy.
Okay.
So even in the Quran, in chapter Baqarah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has specifically ordered Ibrahim alayhi salam.
Mm-hmm.
He said to Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salam, وَعَهِدْنَا إِلَّا إِبْرَاهِيمَ وَإِسْمَعِيلَ أَنْ طَحِّرَ بَيْتِي. We made the covenant for Ibrahim and Ismail, أَنْ طَحِّرَ بَيْتِي. They both need to purify this house.
Yes.
For whom? لِلطَّائِفِينَ. Those who come to the Hajj, they do tawaf.
That's right.
وَالْعَاكِفِينَ. This is the one who does etikaf.
Etikafin, that's right.
So the Prophet Ibrahim, we need to, you know, once if we sit and think that this etikaf, which I'm doing in the mosque, Allah ordered Prophet Ibrahim and Ismail to clean this house.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the Akifin are coming.
The people, the residents of...
The residents.
Warukka
is sujood, and those who bow down
yes,
to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
So this was ordered, directly ordered by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the prophets. And we have many verses in the Quran.
That's right.
Which is about the Akifin or Akif.
Yes.
You can find out this phrase or this
yes,
word
yes.
in the Quran.
Mu'takif, Akif, you know, all
yes.
them. They are the derivatives, we can say, as you said, Akafa, as you said, that's right.
Allah, Allah. إن الذين قالوا ربنا الله ثم استقاموا تتنزل عليهم الملائكة ألا تخافوا ولا تحزنوا وأبشروا بالجنة التي كنتم توعدون. الله 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 لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Sheikh Rouhani, especially in today's world, you know, the people are busy with the materialistic life more than before. You know, you just sit down in your car, drive to the mosque, you are connected with your social on the social network with so many people all across the world. So you need a kind of seclusion, as I said, the solitary life, in order to go somewhere, worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, be disconnected from all the things that deviate you from the right path, the distractors. What about the benefits of itikaf? What are they? Are they only useful for the youth, or no, all the people from different generations can take part in that? And what are the benefits with that?
Yes, first of all, let me mention one of the practical solutions. How can we attend to the i'tikaf while we are so much busy working all days? Some of our friends in European countries, they have this nice kind of program for their, let's say, for each year. For example, they have some days off. During the whole year.
Okay.
And they put those days which are off, they work in those days,
yes.
and they say, for example, in the month of Muharram, for 10 days, I want to take off.
Uh-huh.
Or, for example, some of them say that in the time of i'tikaf, I want to be off.
So they select their leaving
yeah.
for that day. They change
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right.
They
Very
work
good.
Instead of these days
they
and the other
the
days.
They change the calendar.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because the working
exactly.
calendar, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is one of the very good solutions for i'tikaf.
Very
that,
good.
Okay, it's only for 3 days.
Yes.
You have some days off in every month, for
yes.
example. So you can change those time and work on those days. And
yes.
instead of that, go
for
to...
For example, the weekend you work.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
instead of that, you
yeah.
take leave during, for example, i'tikaf
exactly.
time. Very
exactly,
good.
Yes.
Very nice.
So this is a very practical solution
very
that
good.
You can make use of it for attending i'tikaf at least once in your life.
Yes.
Because it will have lots of benefits. You know, let me just briefly mention this nice story of Sheikh Shahabuddin Sohrawardi, one of the greatest scholars of Islam.
Yes.
Once someone asked him that, okay, how can we trust you scholars that, for example, if we practice such and such a thing, we will gain something, we will achieve something.
Uh-huh.
You just promise us something, yeah, but we are not sure how to get that. How can you make us sure and certain that, yeah, we will achieve something?
Yes.
Sheikh Shahabuddin Sohrawardi gave this example of the astronomer. Said when an astronomer tells you that, for example, the lunar eclipse, or what is that? The
Khusuf and Kusuf.
Khusuf and Kusuf, yeah.
Solar eclipse
is going to happen in a certain day.
Yes.
How can you trust him?
Yes.
You know, it's only a promise. Yes. He says, just tell you something will happen. Then Sheikh Shahabuddin explained that, okay, because you know that this astronomer gained or achieved certain knowledge, he studied, he had some instruments and, let's say, tools, and then he know how to use them.
Yes.
How to make use of them, magnifiers or those kind of telescopes, things like that. And then finally, he predicted that, for example, something will happen.
Very good.
So if you people want to understand that how that eclipse will happen, you have to first achieve the knowledge.
Yes.
And then know the instruments.
The utilities, that's right.
And then you have to know how to use them.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, you would be able to see the lunar eclipse before it happens. So that's why it's not a promise only. The astronomer sees what is going to happen.
Okay.
That's why he says that you Muslims, you youth, at least trust the scholars, trust the trainers, and practice. Once you practice, you will see what will happen to you.
Very good. Very.
And that is why...
Taste, exactly.
Yes, very good. For example, he said that, okay, you are in search of finding, for example, pleasure, let's say calmness, or what we can say...
Tranquility. Peace of mind, peace of soul. Prosperity, okay.
We're always looking for prosperity, for a prosperous life, happy life, to enjoy everything, to have enjoyable life. As he says that, okay, let's practice at least.
Yes.
Practiced what the Holy Prophet said, what the Imam said, for example. Once you practice, you feel this joy or this kind of pleasure.
We know that nowadays the people take refuge into the pills.
Exactly.
In order to find calmness. And this is really dangerous,
Of course.
And that's why, for example, so many of the Islamic rulings, Islamic teachings, like the period of i'tikaf during the months of Rajab, Shaban, and the other intervals of the year, are the prescriptions for some of the people who are tired of this worldly life, okay?
Exactly.
At least go and taste once. How is it?
Yeah.
The Arba'in procession, go and taste it.
Yeah.
The pilgrimage, the Salat, go and taste it. Fasting, go and taste it. And then you can find the sweetness, as you said. That's right. Yeah. Okay, very nice. Okay, Sayyid Mohsen, what about the other benefits? And how to keep the spirit of i'tikaf alive in ourselves after these 3 days are done or 10 days are done?
Well, obviously, it's a sequence because you can see that, the Islamic months that they come. Rajab is amongst the first spiritual, you can say, month, which is for the preparation of Sha'ban.
Yes.
And after that, Sha'ban is the preparation for Ramadan.
The three loved months by Prophet Muhammad. That's right.
So basically, these are designed in a way by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that a person who does i'tikaf for 3 days in Rajab, he gets prepared for Sha'ban.
Okay.
And in Sha'ban, we have many more things.
Yes.
Many more workshops, celebrations as well in the month of Sha'ban.
Very good.
And, Ramadan, let me put it into the material way.
Okay.
That in Ramadan, people think like, I'm fasting, so it's kind of, something that is taken away from me. People might have some sadness.
Yes.
So Allah has put Sha'ban a month of celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no, mourning in it because in the month of Sha'ban, we have all the viladats, the birth anniversaries of Aimah al-Bayt, that people celebrate so much and then they get ready. They have spiritually, because, when you celebrate these, there's a spirituality as well for
you. There is a boost up.
There's a boost up.
Yes, that's
so
right.
So basically, you prepare yourself in the month of Rajab for 3 days. You fast for those 3 days. You go to the mosque.
Yes.
In the month of Sha'ban, you have all the celebrations. Mm-hmm. You have other, the prayers and all those that you perform.
That's right.
And fasting as well is recommended in the month of Sha'ban. And then you get ready for the month of Ramadan.
That's right.
So basically, rather than saying like how we can keep that, we should see in this way that Allah has put some days in each month, which are highly recommended, for example, for fasting, for giving charity, and all those things. So this will help gradually. And therefore, obviously, when we perform, when we give importance to the i'tikaf for the month of Rajab, we definitely give importance to the other things in the other months as well. Because it shows that the one who has devoted, because, you know, i'tikaf itself, akif, akafa, it means devotion.
Devotion, yes.
Because
one of the meaning is devotion.
Because this word has been used for, you know, the Prophet Ibrahim has said to Adar, like his uncle, that why you have devoted yourself to worshipping these idols.
Yes.
So there the word akif is also used. So if someone search in the Quran, don't say like akif is, you know, it's been used for that. A word can have many meanings. But the real meaning is devotion. So here when we say i'tikaf is the pure devotion towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right. Okay. Hopefully Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us and all the Muslims the chance of attending the 3 days of i'tikaf in the month of Rajab, 13th, 14th, and 15th days and nights of the month of Rajab, fasting over there, attending. And you know, some countries like Islamic Republic of Iran held organized sessions and gatherings in the mosques and in neighborhoods, you know, are dedicated to these ceremony and rituals over there. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of i'tikaf. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me. And I try to remember not to take anything for granted.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. Please don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.ir. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the United States, Katie McEnany. A former White House press secretary has been described as a liar and an opportunist by a former aide to Donald Trump. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Kylie McEnany, Donald Trump's final White House press secretary, is a liar and an opportunist, according to testimony to the House January 6 committee by Alyssa Farah Griffin, formerly a communications director to Donald Trump. In testimony released on Thursday, 29th of December, Alyssa Farah Griffin was asked where McEnany fell after the 2020 election. Either, hey, we lost, let's gracefully exit, versus, let's facilitate the big lie that Donald Trump's defeat by Joe Biden was caused by electoral fraud. I'm a Christian woman, Alyssa Farah Griffin said, so I will say this. Kylie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist. McEnany, who became a Fox News host after leaving the White House, did not immediately respond. Alyssa Farah Griffin now works for ABC. She also said McEnany was a smart woman and not an idiot. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces. And that was more important to her than telling the truth to the American public. McEnany has often addressed the issue of whether she lied while working for Donald Trump. When she first stood behind the White House podium in May of 2020, she promised to tell the truth to the American press. A reporter asked, "Will you pledge to never lie to us from that podium?" McEnany replied, "I will never lie to you. You have my word on that." She has repeated the claim, saying in June of 2021 she never lied as press secretary. McEnany also released a highly selective memoir, "For Such a Time as This, My Faith Journey Through the White House and Beyond." The book repeats the claim she never lied to reporters, in part because her education at Oxford, Harvard and Georgetown meant she always relied on truthful, well-sourced, well-researched information. Kylie McEnany also spoke to the January 6 committee. In its report issued last week, it said, a segment of her testimony seemed evasive. In multiple instances, McEnany's testimony did not seem nearly as forthright as that of her press office staff, who testified about what Kylie McEnany had said. The committee also noted that though McEnany disputed suggestions that President Trump was resistant to condemning the violence and urging the crowd at the Capitol to act peacefully when they crafted his tweet, at 2:38 p.m. on 6th of January 2021, one of her deputies, Sarah Matthews, told the Select Committee that McEnany informed her otherwise. Griffin, who left the White House in December of 2020, told the committee she did not confront McEnany while both worked for Donald Trump, adding that she got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she'd always planned for it to, but she knew better. Griffin also described the chaotic workings of the Trump White House, which she called the flattest organization I've ever worked in, meaning the one with least distance between staff at the bottom and the top. She said Mark Meadows, Donald Trump's final chief of staff, meant to control access to the president, was a true believer to the end. Griffin told the committee, I would see press assistants in the president's personal dining room and not know how they got there, a press assistant being a very junior staffer. Accounts of senior staffers' attempts to control access to Donald Trump are legion. According to a book by Stephanie Grisham, Kylie McEnany's predecessor as press secretary and a longtime aide to the First Lady Melania Trump, one press aide in particular caught Donald Trump's attention. Stephanie Grisham wrote, I began to notice that he was taking an unusual interest in a young, highly attractive press wrangler on my team. What I do know is that he behaved inappropriately, and since the woman worked for me, I tried to protect her and keep his unusual interest in her under wraps. According to Stephanie Grisham, Donald Trump told one of her deputies to bring the woman up to the office cabin on Air Force One so he could look at her. Grisham said she came close to telling Melania Trump about such behavior, but was not alleging that anything happened between the president and the woman. It would have been pretty hard for him to pull that off, even if he wanted to, she said. American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story. Former Trump White House Communications Director Alisa Farah Griffin called former White House Press Secretary Kylie McEnany a liar and an opportunist in her interview with the House Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. Alisa Farah Griffin's scathing view of Kylie McEnany, her former colleague, was included in a batch of interview transcripts released by the House panel on Thursday, 29th of December. In the interview, Farah Griffin criticized Kylie McEnany for helping perpetuate the notion that the 2020 election was stolen. "I'm a Christian woman, so I will say this. Kylie McEnany is a liar and an opportunist," Farah Griffin said in her April interview with the committee. "She's a smart woman. She's a Harvard law graduate. She knew we lost the election, but she made a calculation that she wanted to have a certain life post-Donald Trump that required staying in his good graces." She said McEnany wasn't a true believer in the idea that former President Donald Trump actually won the 2020 presidential election. After leaving the Trump administration, McEnany secured a job as a contributor to Fox News Channel. Farah Griffin pointed to her new cable news spot in her interview with the panel, saying, "She got her Fox News gig. It worked out precisely how she's always planned for it to, but she knew better." Farah Griffin, who is now a co-host of ABC's The View, said, "She thinks most people around Donald Trump know that the former president lost the 2020 presidential election. The only people I think are true believers are like Dan Scavino, John McEntee, Mark Meadows to some degree," she told the House panel. Farah Griffin resigned from the Trump administration in December of 2020, just weeks before the official end of Donald Trump's term in office. She told the website Politico in January of 2021 that she stepped down because "I saw where this was heading and I wasn't comfortable being a part of sharing this message to the public that the election results might go a different way."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.